information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Sure, you can trust your government. Just ask a Native American. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 196 of Media Monarchy. It's Black Friday yet again, November 26, 2010, the year we make contact. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, Black Friday and the National Ransom Holiday in America, grand chessboard tension, and the anniversary of an American coup. Plus, our in-studio guest, security expert and author H. Michael Sweeney of ProParanoidPress.com. All that is here for you. November 26, 2010, episode 196 from MediaMonarchy.com. Brand new music from the one and only Elvis Costello. That's the title track from his brand spanking new album, National Ransom. That's his second straight collaboration with super producer T-Bone Burnett. And of course, I'm a longtime Elvis Costello fan. His debut record, My Aim Is True, came out the week I was born, second week of August 1977. But ladies and gentlemen, it's November 26th, 2010. It's another Black Friday, and this is the 196th episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And a huge thanks to our list of affiliates, the big two that carry Media Monarchy live worldwide for you, ZeroPointRadio.com. Help simulcast worldwide as well. Their AM and FM signals in Casper, Wyoming on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. And of course, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. And also, Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, 98.5 FM. And our neighbor to the north, Berkeley Liberation Radio.net on 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California. OneSkyRadio.com on 90.7 FM, Kisilov, Alaska. StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia. 89.9 FM, Patriot Radio in La Mesa, Texas. And thanks to Glenn at KBOO.info and Jeff at Radio23.org. Huge thanks to all those folks who helped spread the word about Media Monarchy. The site, the show, the videos, the interviews, the mixtapes, the B-sides. All the massive media pouring out from independent alternative media. You can, of course, connect up FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, send your news tips, and make contact mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Of course, we're on Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. And yes, we are independent alternative media that can only grow and flourish with your support. And sometimes that has to take a dirty monetary form. And a huge thanks to Jason in Alaska for his recent donation. His care package will be going out very soon as a thank you for helping keep MediaMonarchy.com rolling and growing and getting bigger and better and spreading this message. We've been on a hiatus from NewWorldNextWeek.com, the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. We'll be kicking it back December 2nd, this coming week. So yes, a lot going on. And as I may have grumbled about last week, it's one of those times again where the technology gods are against me. Mixer difficulties, microphone, blah, blah, blah. But your support can help make all this happen. And again, I'm not getting rich by doing this by any stretch. I'm only asking for your help to pay for the domain names, to give me some Skype credit to perform interviews. And yes, with some AV gear as well. Our in-studio guest is waiting in the wings, my friends, security expert and author H. Michael Sweeney of ProParanoidPress.com. And I don't want to make him wait too long, because I'm glad he's here, and we're going to talk about a lot of important things and a lot of very timely things, and see how some of the mainstream media stories relate to some of the hidden issues. We're going to try and hit some of the subtext of what's going on. And yes, that'll relate to everything from the TSA to Star Whackers, as it's poorly euphemistically termed. We, of course, always like to glance at Google News to see what's breaking. And again, this is Black Friday morning, November 26th. Two-year anniversary of the Mumbai attacks, of course, helped along with a Fed implant named David Headley. But, of course, we have the Korean situation. 21 minutes ago from the Los Angeles Times, North Korea's artillery and rhetoric keep tensions high. Meanwhile, retail CEOs see longer Black Friday lines. Just like witches at black masses. And the third story on the top of Google News, FedEx seeks missing shipment of radioactive rods. Whoops. But of course, the corporations never suffer from their malfeasance. It's us, the slaves, who have to be groped and prodded and essentially give up any essential personal liberties. Meanwhile, it's the corporations that, oops, whoops, we let that virus out. Oh, whoops, we're missing some radioactive rods. Or how about broken arrows of loose nukes flying across the country? All those things swirl around, my friends. And what we do here is not come at this from a fear-based angle. Because there's enough of that coming from both sides of the mainstream and alternative media. And as we always want to point out, just because we have articles posted doesn't mean we wholeheartedly endorse it. We're trying to, again, give you the text and the subtext and the context. So I'm going to do my best to blast through all of the unbelievable news. TSA, JFK, what else do I have to say? We'll start with the 11:25 News Purge. Longtime listeners know the News Purge is just a ugly list of headlines put into categories for you, again, to go do the research for yourself. And we title it, The Elite Bleat, They're Obsolete. And that is a line from National Ransom, the track we heard at the start of the show, brand new from Elvis Costello. And I went ahead and posted up the album art for his record, National Ransom. Kind of looks like a dollar bill at first. And you look at each corner, and it's different forms of currency, pounds and dollars and others. And it's done in the style of a dollar bill, but it's in color. And the center has a wolf in sharp clothing and a top hat with a briefcase of money flying out, and it's on fire. And there in the background, you see, of course, the pyramid and the all-seeing eye. We always like to note when artists are able to explicate what's going on, perhaps that a lot of us aren't able to put into words, let alone music. Artists are the ones who generally see and comment. So the first note we'll make on this news purge, of course, yesterday was Thanksgiving. And lest any of us forget, we give a link to newsjunkiepost.com on Thanksgiving, celebrating the genocide of Native Americans. Now again, my friends, we don't have time to go into great detail on any of these stories. We're just going to blast through them. So, buckle up. 9/11 updates. Think tank reports from rawstory.com that 92% of Afghanis have never heard of 9/11. And yet, if we can make a gruesome analogy between that and Native Americans, a population blamed and brutalized for something they had nothing to do with. Most 9/11 workers settle their suits over toxic ash. More on that from MSNBC. And a related note on the terror events that move the agenda forward. From the Daily Mail, 77 tube driver was told the blasts were only a power surge as he pleaded for help. 77 related to 9/11 in many ways. But we move to our BioWars and EnviroHealth updates. Gulf oil spill recovery executive dies in a plane crash. Another crash of convenience. As we will note, the cleanup operations happening in the industrial complexes that connect military, media, pharmaceuticals, government agencies. U.S. scientists significantly more likely to publish fake research. That's from physorg.com. So keep that in mind when We get this article from the Los Angeles Times. Toxic waste dump ruled out as a cause of birth defects in Kettleman City, California. There's a mass amount of birth defects, but it's certainly not from the toxic waste dump you live on. A letter from the editor on foodsafetynews.com on moving Plum Island. Of course, we've noted in recent weeks the discussion about moving the biolab to Manhattan, Kansas, where even their own reports note, yeah, there's probably a 70% likelihood that we'll let some bioterror eugenics germ out. FDA stops sales of Darvocet after more than 50 years. More on that from allgov.com, and maybe we'll again make the gruesome note that perhaps we should have stocked up on some Darvocet and Four Loko before they were all banned, so that we may have some kind of bartering tool if our cities fall apart. And our last EnviroHealth note from the WinnipegFreePress.com: study shows smart people sleep late. Our couple of drug war notes: Texas Governor Rick Perry calls for U.S. troops to fight Mexico's drug war. And the other one, U.S. moves to ban chemicals in synthetic marijuana. Ban everything. You aren't smart enough to take care of yourself. We need to ban everything. And yes, we get to our EconoCrash notes. Black Friday, a festival of greed in a sea of pain and suffering. The economiccollapseblog.com getting into the charade that we see. And it is the charade. It's the shadows cast on the wall of Plato's cave. Because going on behind the scenes, we learn from Blacklisted News, and I believe this comes just straight from mainstream media, the mainstream talking heads. And we also note Brad Sherman even said on the House floor in October 2008, threatening martial law if the TARP bailout bills weren't passed. And of course, it passed with the collusion of the previous puppet and the current puppet administration. But we have a CNBC report where the Pentagon and the military are actively wargaming large-scale economic breakdown and civil unrest.
The U.S. versus China, it's looking more and more like an economic Cold War, and it's not just a talking point at the Pentagon. They are planning for real economic threats to America. Our Eamon Javers has the latest on the war games that are playing out in some high councils around your parts. Eamon?
Hey, Tyler. Well, you're right. Ever since the crash of 2008, the defense intelligence establishment has really been paying a lot of attention to global markets and how they could serve as a threat to U.S. national security interests. At one upcoming seminar that we're going to see here next month, they're taking a look at a lot of the issues that might be really familiar to CNBC viewers. Take a look at some of the Pentagon's key concerns here. They're looking at the use of sovereign wealth funds to manipulate markets and currencies. They're looking at nation-state economic collapse, sovereign default, and nation-state instability. And they're also worried about U.S. allies' budgets, deficits, and national security infrastructures. And in the Army, they're having a very interesting year-long exercise called Unified Quest 2011. And in that wargaming series, they're looking at the implications of large-scale economic breakdown inside the United States that would force the Army to keep, quote, domestic order among civil unrest and force the Army to deal with fragmented global power and drastically lower budgets. This according to the trade publication InsideDefense.com. And in October, military officials from the Marine Corps War Colleges visited the trading floor of J.P. Morgan to study markets and the economy. So, Tyler, you can see that all different parts of the Pentagon and defense intelligence establishment are looking at markets and looking at ways they can present a new kind of threat to the United States. These are the guys whose job it is to think about the very worst possible things that could happen, and they've dreamed up some very scary scenarios here.
All right, Eamon, thank you very much.
There you have it. The Military Unified Quest 2011. Wargaming for complete economic breakdown and civil unrest. Meanwhile, Georgetown professor tells Congress in general and our own Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley in particular that most of the large banks, JP, Bank of America, Goldman, are all completely insolvent. Meanwhile, the list of problem banks grows despite solid net income, again from CNBC. Meanwhile, corporate profits hit record high yet again. Because all profit is privatized and all debt is socialized. Rothschild and Goldman bondholders are getting U.S. taxpayer billions in the Irish bailout. Cryptogon.com asks if fleeing millionaires from the U.S. could cause some sort of wild card economic event. Chris Floyd getting into the elite's one-way class war. EndOfTheAmericanDream.com notes that home sales drop once again. Actor Wesley Snipes headed to prison for tax evasion. Meanwhile, a 1939 Batman comic sells for nearly $500,000. And a hacker was arrested for cracking the Federal Reserve. And our last EconoCrash note comes from shtfplan.com. The first 12 hours of a U.S. dollar collapse. It's a longer video, so I won't play the clip for you, but it's quite fascinating. A speculative, however informed, speculation about what would happen in the first 12 hours of a dollar collapse. And, of course, it would be kicked off by our doomed suicide-pact relationship with China and all the other things that that entails. Bizarre notes going on in the world of murder and mayhem. We've got two stories. The first one is from CNN, and we have the follow-up from Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect, where an bit actor, who I guess is mostly known for having been on the show Ugly Betty, has been charged with a sword murder. That's right. Charged with killing his mother with a Masonic sword.
You heard screaming and stuff like that, but if, I don't know, nobody couldn't help, nobody couldn't do anything. This is what upset me.
That they didn't kick down the door?
That's the thing.
A Brooklyn actor was arrested for killing his mom on Tuesday morning, and cops say he used a sword to do it.
They didn't kick down the door. Somebody could have did something. The cops came and they didn't do anything. They didn't do nothing. She could have been in line right now.
55-year-old Yannick Bray was found in her apartment at 501 Park Place in Brooklyn at 2 a.m. Cops say her son, Michael, an actor, stabbed her to death with a sword he received in a Masonic ceremony. Police took Bray, who's appeared on such TV shows as Ugly Betty, to Kings County Hospital for psychiatric evaluation. This is Brian Stillman with the New York Post.
Things have gotten quite interesting in the media meme world that seems to intersect brutally with our murder and mayhem coverage. Of course, noting last week the seeming assassination hit on publicist Ronnie Chasen. But again, furthermore on that story and the Masonic connections, again from copycateffect.blogspot.com, man charged in Alabama with the death of his bride in Australia. Then in California, prosecutor says man's home was a bomb factory. And our last bit of mayhem, again from allgov.com, hundreds of homeless and foster children in Florida summer camps run by convicted criminals, which is no surprise. We've talked about many, many times here. Corrupt individuals seem to seek out those kind of positions where they can abuse many, many things. On to Obamasiya updates, where we added the photo of the recent issue from Newsweek where Obama is called on the cover God of all things. But if you can read the signs, you know he's Shiva the Destroyer. Now I am become Death the Destroyer of Worlds. That statue, of course, is also outside the CERN Large Hadron Collider. And if all of that wasn't ridiculous enough, Obama to give Poppy Bush the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Even though most of these guys should be put into the Hague. Which would be better than they would give other folks. Another one I suppose we could file under Air Force One, which was our name for the story where the low-flying Air Force One look-alike freaked out New York in that photo op drill psychological operation. The update to that is now the military is pegging the hourly Air Force One cost at $181,000+ as the Obama-siah sets a travel record.
And now some fresh pickings from the political grapevine. New figures from the U.S. military tell us just how expensive it is to operate Air Force One. The estimated travel cost comes to a staggering $181,757 per hour. Today, the 89th Airlift Wing provided updated numbers that factor in fuel and aircraft maintenance. The estimates are much higher than past figures in the $100,000 an hour range. The National Taxpayers Union says using the new figure, President Obama's 48 hours in the air during his 10-day Asian trip cost at least $8.7 million, and that's just for Air Force One. Traveling to last week's NATO summit in Portugal added another $2.7 million. Now, these are real numbers from the U.S. military, but keep in mind, every administration deals with the high price of presidential travel. President Obama's most recent book, a work for children called Of Thee I Sing, A Letter to My Daughters, is selling pretty fast. The publisher says 50,000 copies have been sold in the first 5 days of release. Found in a different section of the bookstore, former President George W. Bush's memoir, Decision Points, is also doing very well. His publisher says more than 1.1 million copies have been sold since its release earlier this month. And finally, American actor Randy Quaid and his wife Evie insist if it were not for Canada's refugee system, they would be dead. They have filed for refugee status, claiming they are being hunted by what they call Hollywood star whackers. Canada's Immigration and Refugee Board has yet to rule on this case. The Quaids are fugitives from California court after repeatedly failing to appear on felony vandalism charges.
Now, we left in those seemingly unrelated bits to the top of that story about Air Force One, because, of course, it's all related, and we're going to touch on both of those topics again. We also want to note that, of course, Obama pardons turkeys, but not people, as we reported for you last week, nearing a presidential record of no pardons. But, of course, we've got time to give the Medal of Freedom to war criminals like Poppy Bush. Speaking of war criminals, Rahm Emanuel is ineligible for the Chicago mayoral race. We'll see. He'll gangster his way in somehow. Meanwhile, New Jersey congressman fires his aide over child sex solicitation charges. And wouldn't you know, this guy was also a former Obama aide. More on that from NBCNewYork.com. And our last Obama-siah note is just related to the overarching criminal families that interlock, as we note time and time again how they're all related. Last week we noted, of course, that Prince William and his fiance and their relations to American elites, something we also reported last week of all the little bizarre bits that we've tried to bat around and give the other side to on Decision Points. This bizarre story that won't go away, which of course is usually by no accident, as we want to look at the bizarre, I don't know if you would want to call it eugenics or occult or what you would want to call this. Raw story just has the headline, Barbara Bush blames housekeeper for fetus in jar.
We're back with the Bushes, who have always been so gracious to me personally, to our staff at the White House, at their home in Kennebunkport, here in Houston as well. We've had a closeness that hard to describe over these years. Mm-hmm. Spent so much time together. It's great knowing them and talking to them and seeing them. Special to me here tonight. You also disclose, Barbara, George discloses something very personal about you, which he says you gave him special permission to write about. He wrote that when you once had a miscarriage, you showed him the fetus in the jar.
Now, really,
we touched on it before, but you didn't elaborate.
How do I put it in the jar?
What?
How? It's not in the library. No,
I know.
George, Paola put it in a jar, and I was shocked when she gave it to him. Your memory's dim a little bit, but anyway. But he was
shocked that he put it in the book.
No, he asked permission, and I gave him permission. If that's it's his book, and I think he was trying to say that he and I have a very special relationship. We tease all the time, and that's not very nice for me, but you know, you gotta tease a little bit, and he teases me unmercifully. But We're very close.
You had differing opinions, though, on pro-life, did you not?
I don't remember.
Yes, I did.
Shh, George.
You were never that fired up about it.
No.
When I was president.
I wasn't president. Nor was I president when George was president. But that's one issue. I'm not a one-issue person. I mean, I don't believe in that, and I don't think my Georges do either. I think they try to think of what keeps America safe and what is... You respect other people's feelings, religions, beliefs, and I do that too.
But you have your own opinions.
Of course I do. But I wasn't in office. I wasn't courageous enough to run. And I'm still not courageous enough to run.
So they quickly change the subject to just talk about general family value platitudes. That gets off of the story that there was a fetus in the jar. Now, whether Barbara kept it or the housekeeper kept it doesn't change the fact that this is quite strange. Then, of course, you hear Poppy Bush pipe up in the background, and it's all so funny, and we're all such a happy family. We, of course, want to note, as long as we're talking about Poppy Bush, is he was, of course, in the White House on the night of September 10th, while George and Jeb were in Florida. He was also in Dallas, Texas, on the night of November 21st, 1963, interestingly enough, and we'll touch on that in just a few minutes. But our last note on this 11:25 news purge, the elite bleat, they're obsolete, our few Oregon oddities, where we get from KVAL.com, thousands lined up in freezing rain for free Oregon Dental Clinic at the convention center. If you needed a photo of perhaps what's wrong with healthcare. Meanwhile, Oregon technology pioneer and major philanthropist Norm Winningstad committed suicide at the age of 85. And I don't know what to say after that. Strange days indeed. Quickly now, let's touch on our holiday-related stories, where the most interesting thing to me wasn't the opt-out story. And again, you got to wonder when stories reach such a critical mass, maybe what else is perhaps going on. So while we've all been talking about the TSA and laughing about not touching my junk, Congress critters are working on passing food safety bills that would essentially put Homeland Security over your garden. But the interesting angle on this story that I posted up on Wednesday, which was to be opt-out day, from NORAD.mil, commercial aircraft to fly in military airspace for holiday travel. NORAD will conduct simultaneous exercise flights to test response capability as FAA works to ease delays for Thanksgiving. The FAA prepped for a busy holiday season by working with the Department of Defense to clear the way for commercial aircraft to fly in airspace normally reserved for the military. We want to do everything we can to make it easier for yada yada. So they started just a few days ago, and apparently they're going to do it until Monday, the 29th, of course, Wednesday, and this coming Sunday being the big, busy travel days. So we note, the DOD is also allowing commercial flights to use restricted airspace in other parts of the country, such as over the Gulf of Mexico, where we just noted to you a few weeks ago, or rather, a few minutes ago. Oh, time flies. The Gulf recovery exec that died in a crash of convenience. Airspace over 29 Palms in California, and airspace over the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. Do you think the average family lining up to be groped by the TSA knew that their flight could be rerouted over a military missile installation? Which, of course, reminds us of our recent mystery missile, which again reminds us of TWA-800. But the related stories to this, White House North Lawn evacuated briefly after pilot flies into restricted airspace. More on that from NationalJournal.com and our other Holiday in America, as in Holiday in Cambodia, In other police state updates, threat level said air travelers opted out of opting out. Meanwhile, inside directives have come out showing the TSA trying to put it into policy that opt-outers be considered domestic extremists. Of course, if you're giving credence to anything they say is a threat to anything they say is important, you're a terrorist. Just like Section 802 of the Patriot Act. Speedo-clad protester entertains Salt Lake City airport travelers. But here's the bit. TSA turns off naked body scanners to avoid opt-out day protests. This is the angle you didn't hear from the mainstream media. They were saying, oh, there's no delays. No one's, you know, the plebs aren't revolting at all. Everything's going smoothly. The TSA, in seemingly their first smart public relations move, essentially fast-tracked everybody and turned off a lot of the scanners. A lot of quotes from people all around the country. I even saw as close as Seattle. Because I don't believe we have the naked body scanners in the Portland airport just yet. And perhaps the agitated folks here in the sometimes progressive holdout, maybe we can hold it out. Airline passenger questioned after multiple bathroom trips. MyBottlesUp.com and their story of TSA agents took my son. EndoftheAmericanDream.com asking the question, will TSA groping destroy tourism in the U.S.? And I believe we reported last week, I forget what elite bloodline think tank it was, noting from quite some time ago in the past that ultimately travel would be restricted. Does the TSA need an incident to convince the U.S. to accept the obscene pat-downs, or ultimately they just want to make us choose the body scanners? That's the trick. Related story, secret trigger and blueprint for emergency domestic military crackdown plan revealed. That's from HongPong.com. 22 incredibly revealing quotes about enhanced pat-downs and TSA groping. The return of CLEAR. All clear on bypassing airport security again, and it's all about money. More on that from consumerreports.org. It's just a different slave line. And again, we note and remind you that DHS head Chertoff got $350 million contract advising government x-ray scanners would solve the problems. This is all predicated, of course, on the phony underpants bomber, which we've debunked time and time again for you. Seemed to be an intelligence drill, flipped live. Furthermore, and we've already discussed Chertoff, we've already discussed Soros, but here's more profit ties between phony terror alerts, airport security, and L3 communications. And naturally, where all of this leads, the next step, and this is coming from Big Sister Napolitano, the head of Homeland Stupidity, that the next step for tight security, which is the euphemism here for loss of dignity and personal liberties and naked body scanners and groping. Next step for tight security could be trains, boats, metro. Could be. Let's quickly shift gears into the geopolitical situation as the Korean crisis escalates, grand chessboard tension. And we'll take the article from Danger Room, but we'll note at the top that all of this may be a response to drills going on. North Korea attack may be response to drills. Longtime listeners know we always try and pay attention to the military exercises and the war games that go on. They seem to be the window into the nexus between the private military contractors and all the compartmentalized intelligence agencies. Drills in the morning of 9/11, drills in the morning of 7/7. It's not the diplomacy-minded former president who is ready to spy. It's the secretive nuclear submarine named for him. The surveillance and attack capabilities it's supposed to have could keep the tense situation on the Korean Peninsula from spiraling out of control. In the wake of North Korean artillery barrage against South Korean island, the USS George Washington is sailing to South Korea to participate in joint exercises along with the aforementioned USS Jimmy Carter. A statement from the Navy 7th Fleet, which patrols the Western Pacific, says the drill was planned before the unprovoked North Korean attack, just like the body scanners were planned to be rolled out before the underpants bomber. But this will, of course, demonstrate, quote, the strength of the South Korea-U.S. alliance and our commitment to regional stability through deterrence, end quote. In other words, to stave off another attack, not to initiate a retaliation. George Washington and Jimmy Carter, equipped with more than 75 planes, 6,000 sailors, and it's not alone. It's got the destroyers Lassen, Stethem, and Fitzgerald with it, and the missile cruiser Cowpens in tow. According to plugged-in naval blogger Raymond Pritchett, words going around Navy circles that the first surveillance assets that the United States had in the air over the Korean island battle were drones launched from the USS Jimmy Carter. Now, before we get to the other related geopolitical and war horror notes, we'll hit our last clip, and we'll take it from Webster Tarpley of Tarpley.net, a frequent contributor to Russia Today. And, of course, he's the author of Surviving the Cataclysm, the unauthorized biography of George H.W. Bush, as well as the unauthorized biography of Barack H. Obama. In a way to show that these things are all connected, let's hear a brief few moments from Webster Tarpley on the collapse of Irish zombie banks, the provoked Korean crisis that's all escalating the world financial breakdown crisis, and the, as we call it, grand chessboard tension.
Speaking of nuclear threats, North Korea and South Korea exchange artillery fire near their disputed western border, raising all kinds of questions and concerns about what will happen in that region. Also worth mentioning, the dollar and the Swiss franc strengthened after the incident because demand for the currencies increased. Well, investigative journalist Webster Tarpley is here for more. Webster, so what is the connection there with the currency in this incident?
Well, it's a flight to safety. We have this incident with the Koreans. We've also got a big crisis in Ireland, which I think is actually bigger. But just on the Korean side, this, on the surface, this is the kind of circus we've seen quite a few times since the Gulf of Tonkin in 1964. It's a disputed border, and the South Koreans were holding maneuvers, and the North had protested, and then the shooting began. And since the border is disputed, who violated whose territory, or even who started shooting, I think we can't really know from a distance. Normally that would not be anything special. We've had it, again, quite a few times. What makes it more worrisome is that this is now the Yellow Sea, and this is a place where the U.S. and South Korea have insisted on having a presence very close to Beijing, very close to China. Chinese are very, very upset about this. The other thing you've got is just the general framework of the succession. Kim Il-sung put the succession onto Kim Jong-il, and that seemed to work okay. But now we've got Kim Jong-il passing on the mantle to Kim Jong-un, and there may be some generals in the North Korean military who are not happy about taking orders from somebody so young and so inexperienced with no military background. So it means that they're very, very sensitive to provocations more than they would be at some other time. And then overarching all of this, you had this strange missile, this looks like a submarine-launched ballistic missile that went up 35 miles west of Los Angeles back at the beginning of the month. And what was that? There are really two competing stories. There's one story that it was the U.S. shooting off a missile to scare China, and there's a competing story that it was China shooting off a missile to scare the United States. But whichever way you want to do this, we then had the G20 in South Korea, very acrimonious. The U.S. wanted to line up everybody to attack China. Instead, it looked like most people were attacking the U.S. And there's also the sense that China basically told the U.S. to get lost. And there's a lot of bad blood in the Obama administration about that. So I think that's one side. Right? So that's sort of the military security side. But now, if you look at the hedge fund people talking on television this afternoon, they don't really care about Korea. What they care about is Ireland.
That's Webster Tarpley on the geopolitical situation, and we'll run down the other related updates from Danger Room. New U.S. plan in Afghanistan? Awe and shock. Petraeus duped by Afghan imposter. More on that from consortiumnews.com. Meanwhile, NATO-backed security handover plan for Afghanistan. While newsjunkiepost.com gets into NATO, the armed fist of the global police state. Meanwhile, from the Jerusalem Post, Israeli Prime Minister asks for Jonathan Pollard's release as part of the freeze deal. Meanwhile, an ex-APAC official, that's the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, threatens to uncover mass spying at Israel Lobby. More on that from Raw Story. Meanwhile, as the tensions heighten around the world, Reichstag security tightened over terror concerns. Reichstag being synonymous with a false flag attack to be blamed on your political enemies. Meanwhile, German police want the army to help protect the public. More on that from Der Spiegel, where the provocatively titled birdflu666.wordpress.com gets into a possible staged attack in Germany could and would be used for mass arrest of government critics. On a little flashback history mystery note, federal judge orders CIA to release records on experiments on soldiers. These bits leaking out week after week. And you'll sometimes see, oh, we're sorry we experimented on Guatemalans. Oh, we're sorry we got caught giving people syphilis and worse. And our last related geopolitical note, again, we note the second anniversary today of the terror attacks in Mumbai being marked with prayers and vigils. And we go from one catalyzing catastrophic event to another where we'll quickly note this past Monday was the 47th anniversary of an American coup, the national security state, and the assassination of JFK. We have articles from globalresearch.ca, the Associated Press. We've included the fantastic documentary from John Hankey, JFK 2, The Bush Connection, and the few other related JFK assassination updates for this year. Lauren Coleman, again from Copycat Effect, noting, saying a nice goodbye to Arlen Single Bullet Specter. Meanwhile, memorial planned for Dallas officer slain after JFK, that would be Tippett. Looking back at the JFK assassination, the movie at the Texas Theater, they were doing an event on the anniversary where they were showing the documentary Virtual JFK, which gets into the what if of JFK and Vietnam had he lived. And they were also going to show a brief excerpt of the film that was playing when Oswald went to the Texas Theater to probably meet his intelligence handler that didn't work out for him. And the film was called War is Hell. Our last note is that Leonardo DiCaprio to produce and star in a JFK quote-unquote conspiracy film. We've noted some of the other interesting things that celebrities, and in this case Leonardo DiCaprio, connected to the Huxley family trying to get with Ridley Scott and put Brave New World up on the big screen, of course now more than ever. Our other related JFK anniversary assassination note is the recent episode of Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. I did watch the episode. It does get into some good things and points fingers at four American presidents, Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon, and Poppy Bush, and LBJ. All of those things are connected, and I implore you, my friends, to go down the rabbit hole on any of those angles, and as we always tell you, make contact. Send your news tips or your analysis, make comments, any of those things. Help spread the word about MediaMonarchy.com. And you can send those to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. So that's the quick blast through all our news. And we wanted to do it quickly because, as I said, we have our in-studio guests waiting in the wings. So what we're going to do is take a little bit of a break and have a transition to set up and bring our guest in and do our sound check and get everything rolling for what is to be a fascinating conversation with security expert and author H. Michael Sweeney. And we're going to get into that, my friends, here in just a few short minutes. And again, it's November 26th, 2010. This is episode 196 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Armageddon Machine, and that music was created entirely by our in-studio guest, security expert and author H. Michael Sweeney of Pro Paranoid Press. And as we're getting set here in the studio, I'll immediately mention technical difficulties sure are prevalent. So please excuse my tiny, tiny microphone that hopefully will get the job done. But however, you're not here to hear me. You're here to hear our guest. And again, thanks so much for coming in. Can I call you Harry?
Absolutely.
All right. Folks may recall our discussion at the Conspiracy Conference back in June, Conspiracy Con 10 in Santa Clara, California. And that was the first time we had ever met, was on the floor of the convention. And, of course, we met through our now mutual friend, Ron Patton, a researcher and author in his own right. So folks may remember that our brief conversation was included in my coverage from Conspiracy Con, where we did discuss things. So to recap and to refresh folks and to get us all up to speed, can you give folks maybe just your thumbnail bio sketch?
My bona fides are kind of scary, so I'll try to make it simple. Basically, I was a targeted individual at one point to run afoul with rogue agents of certain initialed agencies simply because I had come into possession of a document that, while it was in public domain, my interpretation of it, it didn't seem to go too well with them. I had contacted G. Gordon Liddy by mail to verify one point and then express to him that information. He apparently never got that, but instead, 3 days later, my life turned into sort of a James Bondian experience. And that lasted for roughly 5 years. Thing that happens when you're a targeted individual is nobody wants to believe that. They don't want to believe in a boogeyman, so they tend to suggest that you're just paranoid or schizophrenic. And so you cannot get help from authorities. I was pretty much left on my own and eventually was able to identify exactly who was involved and found their base of operations, several companies involved. CIA fronts, basically. There is no such thing as a CIA front, of course. That's a misnomer. They've been disbanded officially, but of course they're still in operation, so now there's no accountability. So they are illegal if you find one. In any event, doing that, I was able eventually to establish a sort of a blackmail insurance policy so they'd leave me alone. And it prompted me to write my first book, which was The Professional Paranoid, basically a how-to on privacy and security.
Which we can even kind of show that to folks who are watching these videos. And again, we stream live video on ustream.tv and again make these available later on youtube.com/mediamonarchy. Your presentation at the Conspiracy Conference where we met, the title of which I can't remember entirely, but the main thing that sticks into my head was something called smart dust.
Yes, very scary stuff. Basically, the main topic was really to focus on RFID technology, which is a very serious threat to your personal security. Smart dust is sort of a relative of that, a more dangerous version for purely intelligence applications. It's microchips that are so small that they literally float in the air. They're powered by laser beams, as a rule. And when they're triggered with a laser beam, they do their thing. And each little mote of dust is programmed to do one tiny little thing. But you have a whole cloud of them sprinkled liberally in an environment, and they can report rather a lot of information.
And would stick to your clothing or your hair?
Yes, very dangerous. You could actually inhale it, and it's, of course, mostly made of toxic substances. But it's not so much a threat, I think, for individuals yet as it is for certain kinds of military operations and targets. But we fear that it's going to be employed broadly at some point. It's very inexpensive, very flexible in its use. But there are other tools that are already in hand that kind of do the same jobs for the kind of targeting that is more prevalent against individuals.
And when we say that a lot of times people are written off as being crazy for discussing these kind of things, I know I've even seen some flyers here in Portland from someone discussing their harassment and their targeting for information they possessed. And even it, and being myself someone who would be a lot more of an open audience to this, and I even saw it as something perhaps to cover on the show, but even it came off as seeming a little nutty. So I would even say that I've seen things that, even though I know these things are a reality, that it's sometimes maybe they can't express themselves as well. And it's unfortunately just all flushed away under the cover of you're crazy.
Well, and that is actually the whole point of political targeting, what we call political control technology. Electronic weapons, a technique called gang stalking, organized stalking. The original term for it was dogging. That was an invention of a Masonic group called the KKK. And the whole purpose of it is to basically reduce the targeted person into a social, political, and financial zero. So that whatever it is that they fear about that individual, in my experience in working with people, I do online consulting, and in my experience in working with them, if I work with them long enough, we're usually able to find out why they're targeted. It's because typically they knew something. They probably didn't know they knew something, but somebody else knew they or suspected they knew it and feared what they might be able to do with it. So if you target them, the idea is to get them to go to authorities and make these outlandish claims, which would seem outlandish, especially if there's any kind of a frantic, you got to help me, you got to help me. You can't believe what they are doing. Uh-huh. You know, you get all this excitement going. Or to get them to lash out at the people that are bothering them and then get a police report filed on them. So you get these reports officially labeling the person as potentially mental. And so if they later come out and even actually have some physical evidence, nobody will pay attention to them.
This is something that even, I'm not sure if you're familiar with actor, comedian, a guy named Dave Chappelle.
Yes.
He had the popular Comedy Central show that, long story short, he basically quit the show, didn't want to keep getting it bigger and have it, you know, come out of his control where it wasn't his show anymore. And he ran away. But the story was spun as Dave Chappelle went crazy, ran away to Africa, and he's given just a few interviews where he just kind of touched upon some of these things that go on within the sort of celebrity world, which we've only seen more and more of here in these last few weeks and months.
Yeah, with Randy Quaid as an example, I mean, I will be the first to say that his appearance in media would be taken by almost anyone as being truly paranoidal and schizophrenic in nature, but I happen to know things, and because I'm actually in touch with him, I can't really speak specifically, but I happen to know things that would tell me that his situation is no different than many other of the people that I found to be truly legitimate targeted individuals. And in point of fact, you know, that there are aspects of the targeting which will tend to generate many of the same precise symptoms of schizophrenia. And some of these things are very, very subtle, but they impact on that person's ability to communicate. And so their communications tend to make them really seem that way.
Seem more erratic. And
exactly.
I would say, you know, fortunately for someone like Randy Quaid, where many, many, many other individuals wouldn't have this same ability, that when someone of his stature, because of course, if you're on TV or on the movie screen, people are going to listen to you. So when he calls a press conference, it's going to get a little bit more coverage. And the same can't be said for a lot of folks who maybe don't have a famous name.
Exactly. I mean, most targeted people are not in a financial position really to defend themselves.
Or to flee, even flee the country.
Oh, exactly. And certainly can't call a press conference and have a lawyer and all of that going on. But it's absolutely true that the targeting generally goes after those kinds of people. Normally, when you have somebody who has wealth, it's exactly as Randy was talking about. They don't normally target them to make them look crazy. They target them to destroy them. The financial side of it, which is part of his, chief part of his complaint, is usually where the targeting first becomes noticed. And there is definitely a long history of mysterious deaths in Hollywood.
Absolutely. And I was going to bring up some of those, but I definitely want to touch on the fact that you are such a well-known expert in this field that you are contacted by folks in these positions. So, again, you said that you have been in contact with the Quaids, and I know you're only able to say a little bit, but I just want to try to expand on that a little bit for folks who maybe said, what?
Well, let's be clear. I in no way want to misrepresent myself.
Uh-huh.
I am not working with them, but
okay.
There is that potential. And I'm the one that made the outreach because in this particular case, I feel that I would be able to help. The interesting thing is there's also a whole other category of people who are targeted. The super wealthy can be targeted if they fall out of line with the New World Order agenda, and I'll use that rather loosely. That could be defined a number of different ways. But we talk about fortunes like Howard Hughes, the DuPont family, and William Randolph Hearst. Anytime you look at their situation, you'll usually find ties to the military and industrial complex, which went awry, and usually ties with CIA specifically. I mean, Patty Hearst, for example, the SLA, that whole thing was a CIA operation ground up. So you have to be a little bit aware of these things in order to kind of put the puzzle pieces together. But there's definitely a pattern. It would not at all be out of question or out of line for everything Randy Quaid said to be right on the money. It's also possible that he's misinterpreting certain aspects of it and drawing perhaps incorrect conclusions. This is very common among targeted individuals because they do not have the broader picture. They have only the evidence of the events around them. And, of course, they have to try to come up to some conclusion that it's a matter of self-defense.
And when he mentions Heath Ledger and David Carradine and then also the erratic behavior of folks like Britney Spears or Lindsay Lohan, speculating that they are under some type of targeting as well, ties in and implicates, in my mind, the whole system.
Well, yes, and we're really talking about something called COINTEL, COINTELPRO, operation set up in the 60s in the Nixon administration to the military, FBI, and CIA operations. They used those tactics then. And, of course, now they have modern technology and improved methodology. And when we see these kinds of things done to people, done consistently to a wide category of people as well as large numbers, you have to say, well, something is still afoot. And of course, my favorite thing about the CIA and folks of that sort is when they do get caught, it's, oh, well, we didn't do that, and we won't do it again.
This also reminds me, I had an interview a while back with Alex Constantine, and while we were discussing a plane crash at the time that killed a 9/11 family member, and we were tracing just the connections there. One of the other things we talked about was his book, The Covert War Against Rock, and we discussed, in brief detail, people like Tupac Shakur or Bob Marley or John Lennon, folks of those stature that, in that kind of massive level of influence that those individuals could have.
And not just them, mind you. people around them. I mean, one of my clients was directly associated with one of those individuals, and I'm going to hesitate to name, but it's interesting that when you're a targeted person, they will also target your support, and they'll do it differently perhaps, but they'll take away your support structure. And so Randy Quaid was left with no place to go, for example. He had to literally flee the country. It's just not a situation you want to find yourself in.
One of the things we discussed in greater detail with Alex Constantine was the case of Michael Hutchence, who was the lead singer of a band called NXS, who was found hanged, and it has always been sort of officially called an accidental death due to autoerotic asphyxiation, which was the situation, they say, of David Carradine, which, again, Randy Quaid mentioned. The story Constantine gets into with Michael Hutchence is that he was beginning to realize, and just as you said, maybe knew some things that he didn't know he knew, dealing with the gangsters and banksters who were running and funneling and laundering his money, as he was starting to look around and go, gee, I sure should have a hell of a lot more money than this. He was found with a busted lip and bruises that, again, this was supposed to be an accidental suicide. So this is something that Randy Quaid says, is that these are the gangsters and banksters that are manipulating world financial markets.
Absolutely. In any situation where you find somebody who's in any way prominent in a news story, who is suicided, even the local, you announced the
Oregon kind of philanthropist technology entrepreneur, Winningstad.
Winningstad, yeah. I would love to dig into the details of that, because I'm sure I could find something suspicious. Anytime you have somebody who's famous like that and they're suicided, you got to ask yourself, well, is that really logical? And the arguments for what constitutes suicide is really very interesting. If you take a look at the 50 dead microbiologists, for example, there was one who was suicided himself by stuffing his body under a chair after, there was blood splattered all over the room, and his body was found stuffed under a chair, and yet the his body was discovered by ambulance drivers who were responding to a mysterious call. So how does that constitute suicide? I just don't get it. Police will do anything to avoid having to look for a boogeyman. If there is conspiracy involved, somebody can pull a string and the police will just say, yeah, it was a suicide. Coroner reports will say it's a suicide.
And they don't always do that out of being in on it. That's sometimes, I think, the mistake. Sometimes the alternative media or conspiracy researchers can make the mistake of broad stroke implicating everyone in a cover-up, although the cover-up is the crime. And
well, yes, and the police can be directly involved. I know quite a few dirty cops that some of them have given some particular trouble, caused one to resign a high post, but it is absolutely true. The average cop basically does what he's told. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is in major communities, quite often the chief of police and the head of the public relations arm, the PR officer, and the head of the internal affairs organization are quite often CIA in-place assets. So it's very easy to manipulate the police if you have a need.
Which then just reminds me and takes us back to, as we were reporting on earlier in the episode about the anniversary of the JFK assassination, you got the Dallas Police Department and their connections to Jack Ruby.
Exactly. And the same thing in an RFK assassination. The head of police was a former CIA. And just as scary, kind of tying to the TSA issue, Homeland Security, the first two, Tom Ridge and his number two man, were both former CIA assassins out of Operation Phoenix, working through the DOD in Vietnam. And that was a, you know, a mass murder program against citizens, basically, for political purposes. And what it really did, of course, was it gave CIA control to access of drugs in Southeast Asia.
Ah, now we're getting to the key there.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that a lot of these operations can perform multiple functions.
Right. Well, another key person, Lou Conine, who became one of the first heads of the DEA, was also out of that program. Of course, the very first thing they did, outside of shutting down all of the non-CIA-approved drug outlets,
the competition
was to go to war in South America in an attempt to try to get a hold of the drug flow there.
Hmm. And these intelligence connections, I again go back to that episode I was discussing earlier of the Jesse Ventura show, which I don't know, have you ever seen episodes of his show?
I have to be frank, I've not been too happy with Jesse based on the one show I did watch. I have a lot of people tell me that I need to watch more shows. I tend to look at that show as being trying to get you a little bit excited and not quite give you what you really want to hear.
Absolutely.
And also to be self-aggrandizing.
But I very much so that. It's almost like he's kind of taken several pages from the Alex Jones book and is doing a TV show about it. And it's very sensationalized. But ultimately, would I rather folks maybe watch that on television than Dancing with the Stars?
Well, yeah.
Probably.
And of course, he's going to have a following that's already hooked into those things, but he's also going to be introducing new people into it. And so there's some value to increasing public awareness.
One of the things on this episode that I had my girlfriend watch with me, and we watched it on the anniversary date, she didn't know that Poppy Bush was the head of the CIA.
Oh.
When he mentioned that part, it's like, yeah, you never really hear that much about that. This guy, who apparently had never been in the CIA before, suddenly made the head of it in 1976.
And well, most people didn't know he was head I've got a mental block. he was in charge of the big pharma company that developed LSD. And the CIA ordered, it wouldn't even exist except the CIA ordered 12 million doses. And, of course, gave most of that to Timothy Leary.
Does that connect to the mistake they made in the amount that they ordered? Or I'm forgetting a story where they mistook, you know, doses for ounces or...
That was a cover story to try to apologize for some kind of serious outcomes, I believe.
Mm.
The whole program... the whole thing about LSD is the military and the CIA used it to try to find tools to help interrogate people as well as to switch them over to their way of thinking or to simply befuddle them. I mean, it was basically a form of political control technology to that extent. And yet at the same time, it became a perfect tool to help dumb us down overall. I mean, if you can get a whole generation to become druggies.
And drop out.
Drop out. Who cares if they, become activists? Nobody's going to pay attention to them because they're druggies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a wonderful multifunction tool, but they really didn't understand it, I don't think.
What I thought you were going to mention about Poppy Bush was his involvement in what was called Operation Zapata, which was the offshore gun running that connects to the whole Bay of Pigs thing.
Yeah, exactly. I would encourage everybody to read Mark Lane's Plausible Denial or read my book, Fatal Rebirth. Both of those books include courtroom testimony by CIA agents. And, of course, the trial was of a CIA agent, E. Howard Hunt, basically tying him and Jack Ruby and the entire group of people involved in Watergate, except for perhaps G. Gordon Liddy.
I was going to say the aforementioned G. Gordon Liddy.
Yes, in in point of facts, I don't think he likes me very much. I know I don't like him very much, but he's very cute. Yeah, and he's on radio show.
I know. And we just, I think, see when we start to connect those dots that, again, that can be the good thing of something like the Jesse Ventura show, is that people can watch and go, oh. And if they're interested, go do more research about those angles.
Exactly. It is not impossible to find information. It's simply that it is too easy to drown it out with other information, misinformation, disinformation. If you have a manipulated media, if you have a book vanishing, my first book, the one you held up, has been book vanished. Found when I got on air, they ran. I was running 24,000th place out of 50,000 books on Amazon, and when I went on the air with Coast to Coast, it jumped to 24th place. But nobody could buy a copy because one person bought all of the copies Amazon had, and then somebody started advertising that they had a used copy they wanted to sell for something like $56. It was $14 when it was new.
Uh-huh.
And so all kinds of people started selling their copies for $30, $35, and somebody was buying those up.
Even at that rate.
Well, the reason why is in the back there's a list of 400 uh-huh. or 250, something like that, CIA fronts. So I think that's why they vanished. That was all public domain information, but nobody had ever put it into a single source.
See, and I think that's the key, and that's something that I, you know, hopefully try and strive for on the website is, you know, this is all open source information. I'm just hopefully putting it in a better context that maybe makes a little more sense in 1, 2, 3.
Right, and that's why I now have my own publishing outfit, and I do what's called print-on-demand technology. It mm-hmm. makes the books more expensive, but they can buy all they want. I'll make more.
Exactly. Made to order.
And to get even with them for that, my latest book is The Professional Paranoid Defensive Field Guide. It's really a resource information. It's not the title's a little bit of a misnomer, but there's 1,000 CIA fronts listed.
I believe there are in the book that we have right here, there are some that connect to right here in Oregon and Portland.
Yes, my friends, I call them.
Evergreen is
too easy. I mean, even the Oregonian out at Evergreen, it's sort of a public relations thing for them, I think, to be associated with the agency. What I really like is the little secret underground tunnel that runs across the highway. So if Evergreen wants to bring somebody into the country from the Pacific Rim, they don't have to go through customs or anything. And anybody who, like, say, a KGB agent, that's going back to the Cold War, but, you know, a foreign country that uh-huh. might know they're a CIA front and be expecting them to be smuggling somebody in could be watching their facility and not see them exit.
Well, geez, what other shady, literally underground things do we have here in our own backyard?
One of the firms that I mentioned has an underground facility in their building that's kind of interesting. They have an elevator in a one-story building.
Which sounds like a mistake or like a screen door on a battleship, but...
Right, and they were tied to the PAMCO thing. You remember PAMCO, Pacific Aircraft Maintenance Company? That's a particularly Portland ripoff that involved CIA proprietaries. They were supposedly going to refurbish C-130s to be firefighting bombers. There were no C-130s except for the ones that Evergreen was selling to third countries illegally, and or using in their own covert operations, including one assassination. Not to say that Evergreen was the assassinator,
mm-hmm.
but in any event, is that a word?
I think it is now. Assassin.
In any event,
that's all right. I said donator on the show a few weeks ago, and someone's like, "I think donor is the word you want."
Donator. Yeah. So we have our own little things going on here. This is kind of a hotbed, actually. Bonneville Power is very tied to CIA, as is Pacific Corp. And Pacific Corp invests heavily in PAMCO. They were chief architects of the Bonneville Power Administration. You talked about whoops earlier.
Oh, yeah. And, that's right. When we were going to get into that a little bit.
Yeah. Fatal Rebirth is a book that starts in 1947 and goes forward all the way into the future about what happened. Basically, it's about the New World Order taking over.
Well, and 47 is...
1947,
ground zero,
National Security Act,
exactly,
like the switch that turned everything on.
Isn't that also the beginning of the Nation of Israel? Also,
it's right in that time frame, and there's some interesting ties
uh-huh.
there. But thing about whoops is in my book Fatal Rebirth, I make predictions. It is the book that foretold terrorism, bringing down the Twin Trade Center towers by a jet airliner and resulting in Middle East oil wars. It was responsible for predicting an assassination attempt on Ross Perot, driving him out of the election, which took place. And it was a mailed anthrax attack. And I also predicted that...
Was that the 96? Or was that his first run in 92?
Against...
Perot?
Clinton. Basically, it'd be the 96.
Okay, because that was the one where he was in and then mysteriously dropped out and made vague
right
references.
Yeah, right during the Colorado primary, and he won that primary, that would have put him on the ballot.
Mm.
And the other thing that I predicted in that book is that we would have some missing rods from whoops, because the CIA proprietary basically took that operation over and partnered immediately with Islamic interests.
Well, I was going to glance back here at Google News to see, but now that story's been bumped. I don't see it at the top of the page. So let's search. I believe FedEx was the keyword. So, okay, here it is. 1 hour ago from Fox News, FedEx searching for radioactive shipment that vanished between North Dakota and Tennessee. So first, let me guess. This is coming from Minot.
Big SAC base there that's been shut down and is now overrun with men in black.
And so, again, tell folks now that we kind of got them up to speed on now breaking news. Here as we sit, November 26, FedEx looking for missing radioactive rods. How specifically did you touch on this?
Well, in my book, Fatal Rebirth, understand it's a fictional story. It's like a docudrama trying to portray how history probably truly evolved, not what the headlines told us. And when you have a docudrama, you have a set of facts, and you could write them as factual in like an expose form, but certain things could get you killed. But in a fictional form, you have some license.
Mm-hmm.
I can use, for example, composite characters, the real-world people, to become instruments to explore the story. Mm-hmm. And in order to make it useful, though, for somebody who wants to know the truth and to be able to judge whether the fictional story is true or the media story is true or some point in between, I have 1,500 plus footnotes, and it is the footnotes basically that touched on the whoops matter.
And I would just quickly note for folks a probably good example of composite character in a film that, again, relates to things that we've been talking about here would be the Mr. X Donald Sutherland character in Oliver Stone's JFK. He was a composite of, among other folks, Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty.
Right. Prouty liked my book.
Oh, wow.
I was just shocked when he actually contacted me. The thing about Fatal Rebirth is I would really like everybody to read it because it is a real eye-opener. I have not yet had anyone read it and say you're full of crap. And so what I want to do for your listeners is if anybody will email me at ppp3ps. Books pppbooks.com, pardon me, pppbooks@comcast.net. I will tell you how to get a copy. It's a four-volume book. They're like $37.50 a copy for the hard copy. But I have a CD-ROM version.
Oh.
I have ebook versions. I'll make the ebook versions available for $5 a piece.
Excellent.
They're normally, I think, 12 or something.
So we'll include that in the show notes for this interview. And again, also your website, proparanoidpress.com. So that's the three P's there, proparanoidpress.
This is for people who like to...
which again, with my little crappy microphone here, I have to be very careful about my plosive P's. So let's perhaps shift gears slightly, and let me ask you about, because as we see, it's now on the top of Google News, this imminent release of the latest document dump from WikiLeaks. What's your take on WikiLeaks and what the battle has now become about, even some folks saying that, you know, now they're just a cutout or a conduit?
Well, there is an aspect to that. I don't think I'm particularly qualified to comment the way you've framed the question. It's not an area that I've really jumped into.
Okay.
But there is one aspect that ties to your question in a way maybe you didn't expect. And that is, there is coming very soon an assault on free speech. People like you and I will be shut down. And we'll have WikiLeaks as a whipping boy for that. You know, you talk about a false flag operation.
Uh-huh.
We could theorize that WikiLeaks was leaked that information in order to be a stepping stone type, false flag type operation to excuse
a wider crackdown.
A wider crackdown. There has already been one attempt in Congress to pass legislation that would pretty much make you and me terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, we already are. I mean, by definition, the definition is so broad, anybody is a terrorist that they want to be a terrorist.
Because if we're even here essentially questioning government policy.
Exactly. So, that would they were looking for legislation that would empower them to shut us down. I mean, you know, censor the websites and the radio shows and so forth, even to arrest us. So we are in a police state. People don't really quite realize that. I mean, the TSA is a perfect example of that. It's absolutely out of control. It's just a for-profit thing, and it's absolutely stupid and pointless. They do not need either.
No.
If you want to, there's only two threats to an airplane with respect to terrorism specifically. One is a bomb, and one dog could stop a bomb. Okay, I'm sorry, you do not need.
But
all
that's the you need. They need the infrastructure for a lot of this sort of just make work nanny state.
Well, and the point is, it is not about terrorism. It's about population control. They fear that they are going, they're robbing us so quickly and moving towards a police state, a one world government. All of this is going so quickly that they realize at some point we're going to have the 100th monkey. And the 100th monkey, when you get to that, I don't know if people know that expression. I probably shouldn't have used it because it takes too much explanation. But you get to a certain point, you have a flash point where everybody starts to understand.
A tipping point.
A tipping point. And at that point, I think people are going to start reaching for guns. And I am, in point of fact, calling for an armed revolution. And I want everybody to raise their arm, clench fist, and say, no, I ain't going to put up with it.
Absolutely.
And but other people are thinking AK-47s. And so I think that they are planning for a point and want a point.
And pushing people to that point.
Yes, they want a point where they have to declare martial law, suspend the Constitution. They have a whole other Constitution already in place. I have a copy of it in my book, Fatal Rebirth. And you won't like it. It sounds very nice when you read it. It flows very nicely. It sounds very much like what we have. But if you actually look at the analysis in depth, it is a very scary document. It basically gives rights to you on condition and it can take them away retroactively.
Which
you
sounds
could be
just
guilty
like...
of a law retroactively. They pass a law today and prosecute you because you did it 5 years ago.
So if we can't get you with pre-crime, we'll get you with retro-crime.
That's right.
But that sounds exactly like the United Nations Human Rights Charter that lays out this long, luxurious list of rights with the stipulation at the end that we can take any of these away at any moment.
Exactly.
Provisionary.
And there's also a whole other world constitution that is being ratified quietly by other nations and eventually will come to us for ratification.
And they never thought a European Union would take place, but now here we are, and it's been in place for 50 years, somewhat quietly, loudly, and publicly for the last 10.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, well, that couldn't happen here in North America.
But, yes, we have the North American Union folks who are working very hard to unify Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. Mm-hmm. We have the Canamex Highway. I saw a Canamex truck the other day. Actually had all three flags on it, and it said Canamex right across it.
And these are the things that whether we're talking about smart dust or superhighways or any of these topics, are things that they're being unveiled, like either the mask is slipping or it's this sort of revelation of the method that we're going to show you how this is all going to come down, but by the time you realize it, it's probably going to be too late. But these things that people see on TV or in the movies and think that, oh, that's just make-believe, but meanwhile, each little step just keeps coming into place slowly and surely for the most part, but then we have those catalyzing events that sort of fast-forward
exactly
the agenda.
You basically cook a frog in a boiling pot by raising the temperature slowly. They won't jump out of the pot. People are a little bit smarter than that, but not much.
And I guess to go back to the TSA situation, which again we reported on earlier in the show, that anticipating a possible backlash, the TSA sort of preemptively turned off a lot of the scanners on Wednesday to avoid any sort of protest, and then they could grandstand and say, see, everything's running smoothly.
Yeah, I think they basically are afraid. I mean, the TSA folks are afraid of a confrontation they can't handle. I would love, I would really love to organize. My form of a protest would be to have a whole bunch of people go down there naked.
Uh-huh.
And maybe have some friends dressed in black and have their hands taped behind them and blindfolds and tape across the mouth and the initials. And maybe if for the modest, they could put gloves over their breasts and genitals and have the initials TSA on them.
It almost seems to me that as this backlash was growing massively, and of course it was getting tons of mainstream media coverage because, again, they want to push us to the breaking point because they want us to break and crack so that they can do the crackdown. But it almost seemed that it's the carrot and stick. We'll turn off the scanners because you guys were getting a little mad. Almost seeming to be the choice that I have kind of speculated that the elites have sort of said that, well, you can have 1984, you can have the boot on the face of humanity forever, which we could see in the form of complete groping and molestation going on in the TSA. Or you can have Brave New World, a little shinier, happier police state where you'll still have your soma and your drugs and your entertainment. That is kind of the choice that they want to give the sheep. You can have 1984, you can have Brave New World. It's your choice.
Yeah, actually, there's a third choice, THX 1138.
Oh, Jesus.
but, yeah, it is kind of interesting. And we're not talking really, I talk about Shadow in my book like it's one giant organized conspiracy, but I'm also clear to say we don't know that. It could just as easily be a whole bunch of little fascists, basically, who happen to have a line agenda, and so the various actions that they take dovetail very nicely with each other's interests, and so it seems like a broader conspiracy than it is. But even if it was a broad conspiracy, it doesn't take that much. You talk about the Bilderbergers, basically, I fear them more than anybody. In fact, I have a new book called Who's Killing the Bilderbergers, which I would hope to expose rather a lot about them. But the notion is you have ultra-rich people that meet secretly and won't tell you what they're talking about. But, of course, it's nothing important.
Well, and I always like the analogy that could you imagine if 100 celebrities or football stars tried to have a secret meeting?
Just the fashion news alone warrants news coverage.
And just the extent that they would go to infiltrate that meeting of football players or movie stars.
Right, but in this case, it's the reverse. I mean, they literally buy a hotel for the period and fire all the staff and bring in their own people, and they do TSM security sweeps every day, several times a day. Armed guards, sometimes military vehicles, all manner of things. Well, anyway, you'd get a group like that. Each one of them has their own little minion, their own little corporate army, and their own friends in high places. Mm-hmm. And each friend in high place, he could be a very important friend. He might be a president of a country. He might be a congressman. He might be somebody who controls somebody. He might be a general. So it's very easy for a conspiracy to have enough people who control people to cause things to happen such that the people at the lower end have no idea what they're doing. They don't know that it's part of anything even nefarious in nature.
That they're compartmentalized. They're
completely compartmentalized. And so it'd be very easy for there to truly be a shadow-type conspiracy. So I do not discount it. I would prefer it were that way. I could fight that more easily than a whole bunch of little conspiracies.
That's the thing, and we hop back and forth between those on Media Monarchy, because, of course, most of the research shows that, yes, there is a small amount of bloodlines and elites that seem to be connected.
Absolutely.
The other angle is there are really a lot of middle management gangsters battling for their little pieces of turf, and sometimes they have to bump each other off.
Exactly. Everybody has an agenda. Everybody has a goal. Everybody has a mechanism by which they can do it, but they also will have somebody who's enabling them. And those are the people you watch out for.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just to say, I didn't want to lose track of, I said there were two things you worry about that TSA should be in charge of. One is the bombs. The other is, okay, you got somebody who's a terrorist going to come on the plane and try to use some kind of a personal weapon. I am sorry. There is nothing you can do about it. I don't care if you want to put 1,000 cops and strip search everybody. If you have a trained person who's going to get on the plane to cause mayhem, he can do it with that funny little thing on the end of his arm.
Yep.
It's called a hand.
Yep.
If you want to cut their hands off, you might be able to stop them. But, I mean, I could go on an airplane and make a weapon out of a scarf, a necktie, a string, a belt.
Or what about, I'm just reminded of the Clint Eastwood film, In the Line of Fire, where John Malkovich plays an assassin who is inventing and creating a sort of ceramic gun that will go through the scanners.
Actually, a trained dog could catch the bullets.
Huh.
The ceramic gun thing is kind of why they justify the body scanners. But I don't think it's going to be much of a problem for any terrorist who really wants to get onto an airplane to get past a TSA inspection. But 300 million Americans, I don't know where I got the six, are not terrorists. They're the ones who are paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they realize that they are terrorists by the way they're being treated and the way the government views them and fears them, then what the people need to do is leverage that fear and let them know you're just not going to take it. You need to be doing your letter-writing campaigns to your senators and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be calling people on the phone and be hopping mad. If I went into the airport today, I will not fly. Because another thing we know about the TSA is it's a political targeting mechanism. We have instances. Ron Paul happens to be sponsoring House Bill 6416, which is aimed basically at declawing the TSA.
Uh-huh.
And as a consequence of that, we have a Ron Paul
supporter with Ron Paul bumper stickers and money from the Ron Paul war chest in his possession, mm-hmm. basically brutalized by the TSA when they saw those bumper stickers. And there's things on YouTube about that that just make me quiver with anger. I mean, you see stuff like that, be angry and do something about mm-hmm. it. Pick up the phone and call somebody and lodge a complaint.
I think
if it happens to you, start talking lawyers.
Absolutely. It Maybe. Seems like we're kind of put into situations where we're not supposed. We don't get mad about the right things. We get all up in arms about my football team lost.
Yeah. Well, and the stuff that goes on at work, maybe.
Uh huh.
But
uh-huh.
you know, if I went to the airport and somebody and I walked up to that machine, this is my response. I say, "I'm sorry, I am not going to go through your little radiation machine and let you look at me naked, and I'm not going to let you pat me down. You can't do either one of those unless you can quote to me the law that says I must submit.
Mm-hmm.
I am a free citizen of the United States." The Constitution guarantees me certain rights. You tell me what law takes away those rights, and then maybe I'll consider it or I'll walk out the door. But you're not touching me and you're not peeking at me.
Well, and then they will try and follow you out the door with fines and all of these other sort of just extortion rackets.
A fine you do not have to pay.
And I think they're going to have a hard time enforcing on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go to court, fine, we'll file a countersuit.
Well, we're starting to run out of time here, and
yeah.
I wanted to discuss, so we'll switch gears again here. I wanted to kind of discuss the social network phenomenon and how that relates to, you know, our quote-unquote privacy that, again, in a sort of Brave New World scenario, we're all willingly giving up mass amounts of information.
Yes, it's a real problem. The problem is going to get worse. So if they do the things that they're planning on doing in the internet, we might as well just give it up altogether. But right now, if you're a member of Facebook and those kinds of social networks, you're really wanting to be a little careful about what you put out. I would not. People do use, for example, Facebook to reach me. I have about 1,000 friends right now, and I've only been mm-hmm. doing it for maybe a month or two.
Uh-huh.
I'm very excited about that, but I'll have people who will send me messages using Facebook, which they should not be sending me that kind of details. I always put in my message to them, contact me at, you know, and I give them my uh-huh. email address to talk about that. But they don't really quite realize that the people who are involved in Facebook have associations with people who are involved in the intelligence community.
Yep.
They are friends, and they have been caught already with their hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, in sharing information with the intelligence community. And this kind of thing is going to get worse and worse and worse. Listen, if I was going to be elected president, the very first thing I would do is overturn every single presidential executive order. That would end the FBI, CIA, DIA, mm-hmm. DOD. Well, sorry, not the DIA. Wouldn't necessarily end them because the Congress established them, but they report to the president. And executive orders basically empower them and mm-hmm. gave them certain mandates, let's call it. I would repeal all those and we would start over. But right now, the way things stand, we are owned by them. We are state property. And that's the way they look at us.
sorry, leave me speechless there for a moment. I did want to mention, of course, we've reported it time and time again on the show, the intelligence connections in the form of InQtel, the investment arm of the CIA.
I've got a good one about that. InQtel, when I first realized through a little press release blurb, because I was at that time looking for venture capitalist money, and so I just ran across this. I noticed that they didn't have the website domains registered, so I registered them. They had to change their company name. they wouldn't talk to me.
They were done with you at that point.
Yeah, I would have sold it to them. But,
for a reasonable price.
Yeah, I'd already put out my book, and they were already mad at me. So that was my little stab back at them.
I guess... the one main thing we would say is for folks to just be wary about the information they put online, very simply.
Yes, and you know, by all means, participate. You know, people, the other argument or aspect of that is people say, well, I don't want to be associated with protests because I'll be targeted.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. It's a risk. But it's not a risk if everyone does it. A list of names to be targeted is only useful if there's a small number of names on that list. They only have so many bodies and so many tools they can throw at us. If everybody's on the list is meaningless. So I would encourage you to participate. Just be careful of your words. Not like me.
And we know time and time again on this show and also other appearances and some of our other friends in the alternative media is that we want to use all of these tools and bells and whistles and tweets and, you know, all of these little things while we can, while the internet is functioning as it currently is, to share a lot of this information. Because I think we have seen positive changes due to just people becoming aware of something. I think the case of BPA being discovered in all of our plastics and bottles. Massive outcry, and the companies responded by quickly taking it off the shelves. And I think it shows that an informed group of people can actually affect change.
Yes, especially if you can tie it to the bottom line. I mean, boycotts can
absolutely
work wonders. Protests can be useful, you know, outside of people. I mean, one of my little pet peeves is Milwaukee's speed trap. If you have ever driven down McLaughlin Boulevard, do watch out for Milwaukee. It is an absolute speed trap. They write 500 tickets a day, $300 tickets. And
that's another just extortion
angle. It is. It's another form of extortion. And in any event, we're funding fat cats, crooked judge, and crooked other people. Mm-hmm. So what I would love to do is have a slowdown day. You know, everybody stops and honks their horns and waves their banners and basically hit the commerce of the city. It's the way I would do that. But that kind of a protest can be very effective when you're talking about a corporation. So if there's a and there's always a corporation involved somewhere.
There was a great Onion radio bit just a couple of days ago that was like, corporation announces it's reached its goal and disbanded. Because we know that was the original chart, that corporations were to be chartered for a select explicit amount of work and they would disband when that was done. But now they're people and they live forever.
They live forever. Yeah, that would take away corporate personhood.
Yeah, ending corporate personhood and growing hemp, I think, are two amazing, relatively simple ways, I think, to kind of change the world. Any other kind of quick advice for folks? You know,
I might finish with a bit of a plug.
If
you feel you're a targeted individual, definitely contact me at use proparanoid at comcast.net for that. Please visit my website and look at my books. Send me money.
That's, I think, what it comes to more and more is asking. Yeah,
I want to be a corporation that people protest outside my house. I would like to be able to pay my rent. I've already lost my house in the mortgage crunch and declared bankruptcy once. So.
And these are the things that again, we're being pushed. But as many other folks have said, that we need to incite a revelation and not a revolution. They want an armed revolution because that gives them the excuse to crack down on us.
And I have that arm, and it's raised, and it's got a fist. That's my armed revolution.
H. Michael Sweeney, security expert and author. I know him as Harry Sweeney. that is difficult. ProParanoidPress.com is the way to get in contact, and you and I are both on Facebook. We're both virtual friends there, so folks can find us there. And again, a lot of these things that we mention and some of the contact points and reference points will include in the show notes. But lastly, actually, I only briefly mentioned as we were transitioning into bringing you in the studio, Armageddon Machine was the music that we played to bring it into that. Can you just quickly discuss that? Because that's, of course, very germane to media monarchy.
Well, I actually have a whole album of politically incorrect music called Alice in America Land with a K, and that is to fund the Free Will Society. Any donation of any sum reasonable to cover the postage, and you'll get that CD. I have a nice T-shirt, which you can't see, that has the logo. There is a music video on YouTube of the same title. And, in fact, a lot of my songs are in music form, music video form.
And what is your YouTube channel name?
Pro-Paranoid, naturally.
Okay. See, that's the way. You got to be consistent with things and make it as easy as possible for folks to find you on all the different...
I'm a major corporation.
Well, again, man, I really appreciate you coming in the studio, and I hope folks got pieces that whet their appetite to go investigate smart dust and MIMS and targeted individuals and all of these things.
And I thank you very much for having me on, James.
Man, I appreciate it so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what I'll do, Harry, is I'll take the good mic back.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there we are back on the God mic. Oh, it sounds so good to be back on that. As we come to the close of this amazing 196th episode of Media Monarchy, again, my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It was another Black Friday, and again, so much more alternative media yet to come. The return next week of NewWorldNextWeek.com, my weekly video series with James Corbett. So many more things that, again, can only grow with your support. Like I said, that sometimes takes the form of dirty money. So, again, we implore your donations to help keep Media Monarchy going. And we will weather this storm that, again, just as our guest Harry Sweeney said, it'll be with a raised fist that says no. As always, my friends, we remind you at the end of each episode, don't hate the media. Become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation, or mail Media to the Monarchy, at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.